This is LifeMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. The first story we look at is that how the RBI has kept key interest rates unchanged and it has also lowered the inflation forecast. So what is your perspective on that?
I think a lot of people expected wanted RBI to cut rates.
Right.
This includes people in the government.
Mm.
The finance minister said it would be good if RBI cut rates. I mean, not in so many words, but he pretty much said this just ahead of the policy. RBI has kept the rates constant.
Mm.
And if you read the policy, it's clear that it worries that there might be inflation down the road.
Mm.
I mean, the risks are low, especially if the monsoon works out to be normal. But we don't know what impact GST will have. On paper, it looks like it won't cause inflation. But RBI wants to be sure that that everything is fine, right? So I think it's all right. I'm not sure that it deserves as much criticism as has been directed at it for not cutting the rates. It's one of those policies where it could have done either thing and justified it, right? I mean, they could have cut rates by 25 basis points and justified it, in which case the purists would have gotten at them and criticized them for cutting rates. As it turns out, they chose not to cut rates. In some ways, this is being perceived as the Reserve Bank re-establishing perceptions of its independence, because the current dispensation at the Reserve Bank was thought to be not as independent as the previous one.
Right.
I'm not sure whether such considerations played a role. I hope they didn't, because the only thing that should drive policy rate decisions is pure economics, right? I mean, nothing else should do it.
Yeah. A lot of people feel they've been a bit cautious.
Yes, like I said, it's one of those things where you could have argued both ways. I like what they've done with housing, though. If you look at home loans and look at what they've done, and home loans will become cheaper across the board, right? I mean, not just low-value home loans, but even home loans for houses that cost between 30 lakh and 75 lakh, and houses that cost above 75 lakh, all of them will become cheaper. Banks now have more money to lend against, lend as home loans. And when you see this in consonance with the government's own push in affordable housing, I think it's a pretty interesting thing that's happened. And I really like that, because I think housing and construction are drivers of various industries, right? I mean, across the board, the kind of forward cascading effect as well as backward effect that they have is huge. At one end, you have cement and steel that will benefit if more houses are built. At another level, if people buy houses, then they're going to go look for interior decorators. They're going to look for soft furnishings. They're going to look for consumer appliances. So it's like a nice ecosystem which will be created. So I like what they've done with housing. As far as rates are concerned, to repeat myself, the purists felt that there was no argument for a rate cut, no ground for a rate cut. Everyone else felt that with the economy slowing, there was an opportunity for a rate cut. And that is the frightening thing, right? Because soon after the RBI announcement, the chief economic advisor put out a note which said that in a situation where economic growth is slowing, and that is the truth. And we discussed this last week, right? The gross value added and how it's really growth has come down. And I think given that situation, maybe it would have been warranted. But my bottom line is going to stay the same. It's one of those things where you could have done either and justified it completely.
Moving on, the next story we're discussing is how India is now ranking 9th in the FDI inflows, and it has grown by 1%, and it's about approximately 45 billion now. And, you know,
well,
so
I think, yes, it is good news. India continues to remain a good long-term bet, right? I mean, when you speak to multinationals which really have a long-term perspective, because investments have to be driven by a long-term perspective. They can't be driven by what's going to happen in the next 6 months or what's, in fact, what's even going to happen in the next 2 years or 3 years. But that said, I think India still has a lot to do in terms of ease of doing business. We've done a few things. GST is one of those things. The bankruptcy board is another of those things, because previously it was extremely difficult to close a business in India. So there are little things that we are doing.
Right.
The scrapping of the FIPB is another one, although it's still not clear what the alternative mechanism will be for investments that require permission.
Right.
We are told that the concerned ministry will decide, but the rules are not out yet. I want to see that before saying whether it's better or worse, but it is directionally a good move to scrap FIPB. So we are doing a few things, but I wish we did a lot more things. And then, because it is a country which has a huge market, it is a country which has tremendous potential, it's a country which has a lot of resources. Not surprising that it should attract investments.
Right. Moving on, the next story we're discussing is something that sort of puts a cloud over the Modi government, which is about stressed balance sheets of the banks. And they're saying the mood is now much more downbeat than what it was 3 years ago when the government came to power.
Well, yes, banks are a problem, right? I mean, India's stressed assets is around 9.5 trillion, right? Rupees, 9.5 trillion, 9.5 lakh crore. That's a lot of stressed assets to have. Some of them will turn bad, and banks have to cope with it. I think we've addressed the first part of the problem, which is the recognition of the problem. Thanks to what the previous governor did, I think all banks have had to recognize them a lot more aggressively than they did in the past. Because previously, they would just not recognize them. But now you have to move ahead with the resolution. And the resolution is complex. There's a new ordinance that's been passed, which pretty much gives RBI the right to take the calls on this. But I still think that you need to create an environment where the person taking the decision can do so without fear of any backlash. And I don't mean backlash politically, I don't mean backlash from the companies. But you have to understand that when you are looking at a stressed asset, you're looking at a situation where in some cases you're not going to be able to recoup all the money that the bank has given. So you have to take a haircut. The quantum of the haircut, the extent of the restructuring are all at the end of the day subjective decisions. And we know that in India, especially given the current environment that's there, any subjective decision runs the risk of being scrutinized by various enforcement and investigative agencies. So at the end of the day, the person taking that call is usually going to be very hesitant to take that call. So, so I think you probably need to subjectively address that issue to help them take that call. We do have, like I said, a bankruptcy law now. We do have a securitization law now. So banks are stronger now than they've been in the past, but I think they have to aggressively take the call on these loans. And we have to take a call on how we are going to address this going forward. I mean, are we going to create a bad bank? Some people think it's a good idea. Some people think it's a bad idea. Are we going to do something else? So this is one of those things where I think every week we probably need to have one major decision to clear the ground.
Right. Moving on, we discuss the story which is sort of making headlines for all the wrong reasons, which is India's farm crisis or agrarian crisis. There's been a lot of violence and arson in Madhya Pradesh, and there's been firing as well. Even Tamil Nadu, the farmers are, you know, protesting. Maharashtra. So, I mean, there doesn't seem to be any solution, and it's sort of got embroiled in a lot of politics.
Yeah, Indian agriculture is a mess, right? I mean, it's going to take a lot of political will to address this.
Right.
It is a situation where you have to reform everything from land holdings to markets when it comes to agricultural produce to really look at what needs to be done. It's not viable, it's not productive. The bare, at the core of it, is the problem that people are not getting a remunerative price for their produce. That is it,
right?
And now it's got layers to it. So the layers will be, why are they not getting this? They're not getting it because productivity in Indian agriculture is low. Why is productivity low? Productivity is low because there are issues with fragmented land holdings, there are issues with fertilizer overuse, there are issues with lack of a scientific approach to farming, all of that. They're also not getting a productive price because there's no proper market linkage, right? Please note that many of the other people, everyone else in farming makes money. It's only the farmer who doesn't make money, right? I mean, everyone else who's part of the agricultural supply chain in this country makes money. And so it's not surprising that the farmers are protesting. Most of those protesting are small and marginal farmers. But even big farmers are not particularly well off. They're not as well off as they used to be. And we've discussed this in the past. It's the reason why dominant agricultural communities like the Jats, the Marathas, the Patels are all protesting.
Right.
And look at what they're protesting for. They all want reservation in government jobs, right? Because they've realized that agriculture is not as remunerative as it once was. So deep issues need a lot of political will to address them. This government, like all other governments that came before it, has not really done enough for farmers.
Right.
And you're beginning to see the result of that.
Right. But what about loan waivers? I mean, they have promised them loan waivers, but again, that's not a
loan waivers
solution.
Are not the solution, right? I mean, loan waivers are a palliative. And there's the moral hazard of loan waivers also, right? I mean, you're killing the credit culture in this country.
Right.
But so it's one of those things, and many of these states are obviously doing it for political reasons and everything else. I think you need a larger solution to this that goes beyond just palliatives like loan waivers.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.